is Scuba Coach
Under the Sea, the podcast for the inquisitive diver.
Hey there, dive buddies, and welcome to the show. Now, regular listeners will have heard me chirping on about financial aspects of the dive industry in previous episodes. The expectation of low-cost offerings to guests, the knock-on effects to low income for the operators and their staff, dive pros working for peanuts, and the expectation that it is to be accepted just because they live on a beach rather than work 9 to 5 in the CBD. Now, with COVID coming along, obviously the dive industry has had a serious impact and many people have been affected, much like the rest of the world. But I want to focus on the dive industry and I want to discuss what has occurred, what's occurring now, and what the future may hold for dive pros. To aid me in this discussion, I've invited another good mate of mine onto the show, Marcel Vanderberg, and he's a Platinum Paddy course director operating out of Sari Cottage in Thailand, and he plays a key role in a number of online forums specifically designed for dive pros seeking work and those wishing to enter the dive industry. He also has his own YouTube channel, which he has managed to maintain throughout these difficult times. So, Marcel, welcome to the show, buddy. How are you doing?
Yeah, very good, Matt. How are you?
Oh, tip top. Now I've got my morning coffee.
I got my morning coffee too, and I am really enjoying it, I can tell you.
I've got to let the listeners know, about 45 minutes ago, I got a voice message from Marcel, and it sounded like he was breathing out of his backside, and he'd woke up silly o'clock this morning and decided it would be a good idea to go and get some photography shots from the top of the hill.
Yeah.
Glad to see that you showered and not breathing like you've run a marathon.
Yeah. That was kind of funny. Right now on Koh Tao, I think since yesterday, the weather conditions are just like, it cannot get any better. It's almost fake when you look outside, like it's being created. Crystal clear waters, no wind. It's fantastic. And I just went it's always nice here, but this is an opportunity. And I'm trying to get the YouTube channel bigger and better, and I was like, this is going to be amazing B-roll. So there is this beautiful little viewpoint on the top of the mountain, and I felt like, all right, I have 45 minutes before this podcast, I can do this. I did it, but wow.
Which one did you go to? Was it Fraggle Rock or something like that?
Now you got two view, but I got past there, then to the left. I don't know if you still remember that. And I don't actually know how it's called, but you can actually see the other side of Koh Tao. So some people say it's the highest point. I'm not 100% sure if it's the highest point. You can see Tenote and Shark Island, and it's very, very cool. And I just got a gimbal now and trying to figure out hyperlapse. I got a beautiful dog recently, so it was just a perfect moment.
Happy days. Hey, you might have got my old house in that. I used to live at Key Corsellis's lot, that lookout over to Shark Island.
Yeah. It's definitely a good view to be on that side as well. Yeah.
Well, as and when we can travel again, I'm coming over just so I can show my missus the place I used to live. I loved it.
Cool. Yeah, if you come back, like right now, Koh Tao is so beautiful. It's very hard to explain. It's always been beautiful again, but you know, having no tourists during the COVID situation, it's a sad story. But at the same time, it gave the island a breathing moment, and you know, there's literally no pollution here. Nature is beautiful. I've never seen this island so green. The dive conditions are better. There's a negative side to everything, but also a good positive side to things. So I think that when things open up and you do come back, you're going to see Koh Tao even better than before.
I can only imagine that the dive sites themselves have had some rejuvenation as well, because I mean, anyone who works in the industry will know of Koh Tao and how busy it was in its peak, with many backpackers getting their open water and advanced courses and pro training done as well. So to get the dive sites with literally no divers on them now for, what is it, 16, 17, 18 months, it must be fantastic for the wildlife.
Yeah, I actually remember how much effort the local government and the conservation activists on Koh Tao did before COVID to try to reduce the amount of people on the dive sites by creating artificial reefs. So, you know, you have a very popular dive site, for example, called Twins. It's one of the most popular dive sites for training. And they just builded this sort of buoyancy world next to it, which was really fun. So every dive center, they created these structures like a giant octopus or a shark or a fake shipwreck. And then you could take your students there and then do buoyancy skills with them while showing them something different than just the reef. But besides training, it was really also to reduce the amount of people on the reef itself, to take them a little bit away from it. That was a really cool idea. But now looking back on that, it's like this COVID situation sort of, did that, but then 10 times more, where it just kind of gave the reef a chance to fully recover. I'm still, in doubt if it's a bad thing to have a few divers on the dive site, if no one is touching the reef, if the buoyancy is good, is it really impacting the environment? But deep down, I do believe it does. In the end, we're supposed to be part of nature, but sometimes we have a tendency to, overdo it a little bit. And I think right now is that COVID sort of reset it. And you can see that, for example, on the other side of Thailand, where in Koh Phi Phi, they have this very famous beach. I think it's called Maya Beach. And that's where they recorded the movie The Beach with Leonardo DiCaprio. So not only is this one of the most beautiful beaches in the world, but it really got famous because of that movie as well. And I remember that when I went to Koh Phi Phi for the first time, and I went to like a longtail boat guy and said, "I want to take me to that beach. I want to see it." And he was like, "All right, you have to leave at 5 o'clock in the morning." And I was like, a.m. I was like, "What? No, it's on holiday." It's like, I'm not gonna go there at 8 a.m. And he was like, no, like, trust me on this one. You really, otherwise I won't even take you. And I was like, wow, this is just so weird. And I went to another guy, and all said the same thing. So in the end, I was like, all right, let's just do it. Let's just go 8 a.m. in the morning. And I went there. There was no one. And it was just, the sun was coming up, and it was stunning. And I was like, wow, this is the most beautiful thing I've ever seen in my life. And then you could hear that sound in the distance. And the longtail boats guy was like looking at me like that, like, okay, wait, what's going to happen? And you could see the speedboats. Almost like Waterworld with Kevin Costner.
Like a cavalry charge.
like they were trying to go faster than each other, like racing each other. And it was just on the horizon. I was like, oh my God, what's happening right now? Mad Max and in the distance. And they were coming, and those were the tourists they were bringing in from Phuket to go to this beach. And with less than half an hour, it was just hundreds, thousands of people. Plastic bottles everywhere on the floor, littering everything. So anyway, it's a long story now, but what happened was that the government kind of had to kick in, and this was before COVID, where they decided, okay, this is getting out of control. We have to close this beach temporarily so it can recover. And within 3 weeks, maybe 5 weeks, but very short amount of time, around a month, sharks were already returning to the bay.
I saw some video footage. I think Shark Guardian posted it last year. And they're just coming back in masses, aren't they?
Right. And I was like, I was kind of thinking, like, what happened in all that time? Are they just around the corner, like every day checking, like, oh, can we go now? But you could see how nature has a tendency to sort of bounce back very quickly if we just give it a little bit of a chance. So that's clearly what you're seeing here in Koh Tao. Like, we all want the tourists to come back as soon as possible, but at the same time, it was good for nature. Like, I'm sorry, you could say what you want.
Yeah. I think it's down to a noise thing. I mean, the quantity of divers in the water, and, you look at marine species around the world, and noise plays a significant role in keeping them away from particular areas. It's the main form of communication, really, for the bigger animals.
It's one of the reasons as well why, I work for Sairi Cottage, for Sairi Cottage Diving. And I've dived with a couple of dive centers on the island. And one of the things that I really respected from the owner of Sairi Cottage Diving, I have nothing to do with it, was that he doesn't have a compressor on the boat. And actually, I didn't know that beforehand, but, when I went on the boat with them for the first time and I about to go into the water, I was like, wow, it's so quiet. I wasn't used to that. And then under the water as well, it was so nice. And then I came back up and I kind of go, like, guys, what are you doing with the tanks? Are you not supposed to fill them during the dive and the surf interphone? They were like, no, we make sure we do that all on land because we don't want this noise under the water, this noise pollution. And it's absolutely true. Like when you have those compressors on the boat, you have that sound, and it's annoying for us. It's annoying for students. But like you just said, I think it also impacts the fish. But then again, I'm not a marine biologist, so I haven't talked to the fish and went, hey guys, what do you think about this noise? You know, maybe they're loving it. Maybe they're just rocking on it.
Well, to be fair, I mean, it's a good point, because I think there's only, forgive me if I get it wrong, all those kowtow peeps that are out there, but photography-wise, I think there's only Paddy Peach Steel that got an up-and-over shot, and it was the Surrey Cottage boat with a whale shark.
Yeah, that's...
And I'm not saying that's completely about noise, but it's probably played a significant role in it, because all the other boats have compressors on, don't they? Or the majority of them, anyway.
Yeah, no, absolutely. But again, you know, I don't know 100% if it's bad. And, you know, and this is the thing as well with the other dive centers. It doesn't, you know, if they have a compressor on the boat, it doesn't say anything, you know, about the quality of the dive center. They can be fantastic with the most fantastic staff. But
yeah, sure.
It was very noticeable for me when I moved to Surrey Cottage Diving to see that difference. And to, yeah, it was very cool, I think.
Yeah. We experienced similar in Komodo just before COVID hit. I took a group out there to the Komodo dive resort, and their boats are the same. They load the tanks on, but there's no compressors on board. And, you know, several times we're moored up on a dive site, and you can hear the compressors really rattling away on the other boats, and we're sat there in silence. It was beautiful.
Yeah. It also depends a little bit on the compressor. Like some of them, they have a bit more quieter. Some of them are louder. Some of them are newer and older. And, you know, to be a bit devil's advocate, I have to admit, I one of my first leads as a dive master with customers, I remember being extremely nervous for getting lost, right? And I did get lost. But I was still on the reef, so it wasn't lost kind of thing. But yeah, I like kept looking behind me, and these guys were having the time of their lives. They don't know better, right? But I was just like, oh, I just so want to find that boat back. Because, you know, who knows? Maybe they write something bad about me on TripAdvisor, maybe the owner, you know, my career. I had to find that boat back on one of my first leads. And then I did hear that compressor at one point, and I was like, I can't describe the feeling. I was like, yes, thank you. So I actually did manage to, I know it's hard to track sound under the water, but you know, it's definitely a point to go to. So it got louder and louder, and I did find the boat back. So I was like, I was so happy. It was the nicest safety stop that I've ever done in my life. And I came up so happy, and I turned around, and it wasn't our boat. It was.
Were you on the other side of the dive site?
Yeah. Well, almost. Yeah, it was the other dive site, the dive center's boat. So we still had to do a bit of a surface swim. But hey, you know, I tried.
It is what it is. So you don't teach navigation anymore, then?
No, I teach what not to do. I got great stories of what not to do. No, actually, those moments they made me actually fall in love with navigation, because there were a few moments I was nervous. There were a few. I think, you know, everybody got lost at one point. You know, anybody says, I never got lost. Come on, get out of here. So people do get lost, and it's, I think you know, you can take it like, all right, now I'm super nervous and I never want to go down again. I never want to lead. Or it's like, all right, now it becomes a mission to never ever get lost, or even better, to try to find a perfect route for your students, or to find a perfect route for your fun divers, or to, you know, to give them the best experience while still navigating at the same time. So I actually love teaching navigation.
Yeah. Well, it's a good balancer, isn't it? You're either going to be good at it, crap at it, or decidedly average. Somewhere in the middle is not too bad.
Yeah, true. to be honest, like when it comes down to navigation, is that I was so nervous about it that I think the whole nervous part in the beginning when I was a dive master was making me make these mistakes. And I noticed as well that every time I went to a professional around me and I said, all right, guys, look, I'm going to have to lead my first dive for soon. I'm freaking out. You know, where do I go on this dive site? And a lot of them, they were laughing. Like it was one of those things when I sort of like did my courses where, where people were like, you don't talk about this, like buoyancy, you know, you never admit that you're bad at navigation. And I was like, all right, I'm going to this dive site called White Rock. And every single one that I asked was like, dude, come on. It's a big rock in the middle. You know, how difficult can it be? You go around the rock. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, I get that. But what if I lose the rock, right? And then, come on, dude, don't be, you know, I can't say it right now, beep. And it was one after the other instructor that gave me that attitude. And it just increased my nervous levels to the roof. Until like sort of moments before I went to that dive, like one of the really nicer instructors came up to me and says, look, everybody's laughing about you, like saying like, you don't know how to navigate White Rope, but I understand your feeling. I had it too in the beginning. Look, the thing is they're all big rocks. So when you go down there and you're going to try to follow the big rock, it's not going to work. But there's only one that actually reaches the surface. So when you swim around and you look up and there's this one that's almost touching the surface, then that's White Rock. And then whatever you do, never lose it. Just keep going around it, left shoulder, right shoulder. I mean, your students don't know. I mean, you know, an angelfish around White Rock looks exactly the same as an angelfish on the south area. And I was like, just him saying that, I lost all my nerves. And I was like, it makes complete sense. And I did one of the best dives ever. So again, I think with navigation, a lot of people, they are bad or they feel they're average, but I think it also has to do because they're being overtaught. Like it's too difficult, it's too serious, or you're stupid if you can't do it. In the end, actually, it's very simple. You know, most dive sites, I think. And in the end, like if you're on the dive site, just surface anywhere on it and swim back to the boat. It's not like... You know, you ended up in Bangkok River or something like that. That's a bit
complicated. I think you hit the nail on the head. There's a lot of added pressure comes from those dive pros that think you have to be 100% perfect at everything you do.
Yeah.
And it's navigation, ego. I mean, it is. It's ego. And it's, I know it's something that's very close to your heart, and it's the attitude of a dive pro. And, you know, humility. I'm a massive believer in humility. You know, you're not the biggest and the best. And, you know, in past, I have teased my students and said that they're getting taught by the scuba god, which is me. But it's banter. When it comes down to the real passage of information from those that have the knowledge to those that are trying to gain that knowledge, you've got to do it in a way that those individuals are going to understand. They're going to receive it in a calm, relaxed environment. And that way they're going to absorb as much of the information as possible. Putting you into a stressful environment and saying, Marcel, you're shit at compass navigation, that isn't going to teach you anything.
No. Those were the exact words, by the way. Were you part of it? Just joking. but it was a good thing as well at the same time, because, you know, it wasn't just that navigation. I noticed when I got into the dive industry that there's a lot of ego in this dive industry and a lot of differences in quality between instructors and dive masters. And people say like, but, you know, in the end, the industry will filter them out. When you reach the top, the best dive shops, you know, they have the best of the best. But that's not always true, because you can still be even the best diver in the world or one of the coolest instructors and you're funny, but deep down you're just saying, I want to say a really bad word right now, but you're still a bad person. And that bad person goes to the bar in the end of the day. And he might be very nice to his open water students because he wants to sell them the advanced course. But like, you know, at the bar, he treats his DMTs like absolute slaves, like, you know, pack the bags. And once it's done, you kind of see me in the bar and buy me a beer and whatever. And how did I do today as a DMT? Well, you're DMT, just sitting on the side and just keep watching me. You know, it's like, whoa. And I've started noticing that very quickly in the industry. And it's a negative thing, but it also, in my career, made me really go like, okay, that is so who I'm not want to be. And I kept remembering that guy that taught me navigation, gave me that last hint, like it's just a rock that goes to the surface. I'm like, oh, any of those last 20 people could have just said, it's the rock goes up to the surface. And it just made me realize, hey, wait, there's an opportunity here. There's a really big opportunity. Because people say like going into the dive industry as a professional, like dive master, instructor, you will never make good money. You will never get a good career because there's just too many instructors out there, too many others. The competition is, you will never make it. I remember how many people told me in the beginning, dude, it's going to take you 5 years or 10 years to work at a certain dive shop. And yes, that's true if you have a lot of competition. But actually, the dive industry doesn't have a lot of competition. They might have, let's say, 10,000 instructors. But how many of them are good instructors? And not just good instructors, how many of them are superstar instructors? You know, I have to be careful what I'm saying right now, but there is a very, very big difference. So it took me 20 instructors to tell me, oh, just find a big rock and follow it on my truck. You know, don't be a beep. To get to this one guy who said, okay, they're all big, but this one rock goes all the way up to the surface. Once you get that rock, you'll be safe. You'll be good. You can do this, you know. And afterwards, tell me how it went. You know, I would love to hear it. We'll share a beer together. And I was like, wow, I want to go. I'm so excited. So if it takes one in 20 instructors in that particular case to be fantastic, then there's a huge opportunity for professionals. Just don't be it starts with a dick and ends with a K. And if you have the great attitude and you love to teach and help people and see them proceed, then even if you work on an island where there is hundreds of other instructors, then you still have a great chance to become successful and make good mm-hmm. money, actually, because yep. you're not a, can I just say it, dick?
Yeah. Yeah.
Not a dick.
You're not an asshole.
Oh, yeah. That's a great note too. Okay. Anyway,
it's very true. And I think that's what quite a few people kind of miss in the industry is that, yes, we all love scuba diving. We love doing it and people get into it for a career. But it's a passion and an enjoyment of creating happiness in others that makes a good dive pro. Mm-hmm. You know, you can be the worst instructor in the world, but as a dive guide, you could be the best because your passion is showing people other things, not teaching them. You know, it's all down to attitude and having that passion. I get my passion, you know, I've taught thousands of people to be divers and I don't teach anymore because I'm bored of it. My passion is taking people to various locations to show them stuff that they've never seen before and experience wonderful dive sites. I get my kicks out of that. That makes me very good as an expedition leader, and I don't mind saying so. You are a course director that's absolutely passionate about teaching people to be professional, and you can see that through your YouTube channel. And it's all that attitude. Once that right attitude's there and it's honed in on the particular element within the industry that you want to do, that's when someone becomes excellent.
Wow. You nailed it. And to be honest, like if you're okay with it, I'll probably steal this a little bit for my IDC classes, what you just said. I want to quote you on that. There's a similar thing I like to say, but you really just put an idea in my head to teach now, to make people understand it better. What I love what you just said was that admitting that you are maybe not liking something within an industry and then focusing on something else that you are passionate about. Some people are just not good teachers. You can still try to make them good teachers, and sometimes that works. But in the end, sometimes they're just not good. And a lot of times when I notice that, it's not always because they're bad people, you know, they don't care. It's just because they don't really like the teaching part. So, you know, they love diving their whole lives. They love fish. And they realize, wow, this is costing me a lot of money doing all these fun dives, just traveling, buying equipment. Why don't I make a career out of my hobby and become a diving instructor? I can go diving sort of for free, right? Because we're getting paid for it, which is even better. And then I suddenly have to wake up early to get all the equipment ready and set up. And then, all right, that's a bit of a bleh. So their attitude is down already. And the students walk in super happy and excited. Oh, my God, I'm going into the swimming pool. They're like, yeah, great. It's going to be a good day, guys. Why? Because they're not going to see a whale shark in the pool. And that's why they're doing their job, because they want to see fish. So now they're finished the pool. Okay, let's go diving. And then, you know, they swim really fast on the dive sites usually because they're just trying to find the moray eel before the 40 minutes are up or the 1 hour up, and the students are catching up and getting out of breath. And I've noticed this over and over and over again, where their passion is not teaching those people diving. Like for me, for example, like I have a great story about it in a second with a whale shark, but just say something easy with other fish. Like there could be a moray eel, there could be a stingray, there could be a manta ray passing through, or maybe a manta ray, I'm slightly distracted. But I truly first focus on the students. I love to see their faces looking at the stingray, going, wow, stingray. That is for me more enjoyable than looking at the stingray myself. And don't get me wrong, I love fish and animals, but yeah. I love the students' reactions more. But I've noticed that a lot of other instructors, they don't have that because they love the animals more. And then what you just said is so perfect because it doesn't mean they're bad people. It doesn't mean that they shouldn't be in the industry. They should, but maybe not as an instructor, but maybe now, like you said, as a dive guide, right? You mean it doesn't have to be a dive master. You can still be an instructor and be a dive guide. Or like you said, like someone that just, you know, loves to go into tech diving or loves to maybe even manage a dive shop, just loves to have talks to diving customers on land, whatever it is, go corporate, work for the big organizations. And if you then suddenly become passionate again, that's great because then you become super good at your job and that helps the dive industry. But what doesn't help the dive industry is that if you're love looking at fish and you start taking the corporate job, you start becoming like this. That will influence how you are at your work and that will lower the quality of the industry. So it's fantastic. Before you make your choice what you want to do in this industry, like really sit down and think about it first. Do I want to teach people more or do I want to look at fish more? Do I want to do a podcast? You know, talking about fish like you're doing right now. Great, do that. But fix the
negative. Just interjecting there, mate. What's your thoughts on like the zero to hero kind of thing? Me personally, mm-hmm. I think that people should gain experience, gain their dive master training, get experience as a dive master, because it's not just leading guiding dives, and then go on to the instructor. What's your feeling on those people who want to flash through the whole thing and get the dive master to learn and go straight into their IDC as soon as they've smashed out 2 weeks worth of diving and got the 100 dives required?
Yeah, that's a very good question, and it's one of the oldest one I think in the dive industry in a professional level. There's just a few questions out there that everybody asks, that everybody has an opinion about, and they are very emotional opinions as well. Now with, you know, with social media and stuff like that, a question like this on social media would explode all the time, you know. And so people are extremely against zero to hero, and some people are extremely pro zero to hero, and a bit of everything in between. Now, I get this question a lot, especially in my emails from customers asking, but more the DMTs or the... These days, you have to say DMCs, I think it is, right? Dive Master Candidates instead of trainees.
Okay, candidates.
Yeah. But, you know, the dive masters in training that you have at your dive shop, of course, any course director would love them to continue and do their IDC. And then one of the worst things that can happen to a course director is when the staff members or when they go to, you know, on their free time to a bar, local bar, meeting someone that says, oh, you're thinking about your IDC, what, you're still dive master trainee, don't, are you not, you need to get this training first, you need to get this experience first, at least a few hundred dives, different conditions around the world, get yourself a full set of equipment, and then when you're ready, go for it. And I'm like, and then they come back to me and says, oh, Marsh, by the way, can I, you know, I'm going to cancel my package. And I'm like, oh. And every course director listening to this right now instantly knows exactly when they come up to you as well and cancel that package. And you might go right now and everybody else listening, oh, that's because they want money. You know, course directors, they're selling right now. You know, you just talked them out of an advanced course. That's what it is, right? And of course, there is a financial aspect to anything. But you can trust me on this one. When you have the best course directors in the world that truly care about their people first, then this is not the number one thing on their mind. Because actually pushing too much sales actually goes against you in the long run. So it's the opposite. And I know that's hard to explain right now, but trust me. Anyway, why are we then so broken inside when people do that? Because it sounds so good on paper and it sounds so good in theory. When you think about it, you should have more experience before you're going to start teaching people. Mm-hmm. However, in real life, what we have noticed statistically with data that we can prove is that the percentage of people that are not choosing to do their IDC after their dive master and first choose to get some experience, the dropouts or the people that will never then do their IDCs in the end is incredible. Like, I wanted to say on the safe side, 70%, but realistically, in our minds, it's closer to 90%. It's in my mind, yeah. It's like, bye-bye. Okay, cool. Go on with your life. Have fun. Be a dive master. Get experience. And I just know at that point, I will never see you again. So even if they go to other locations, it's very low. So what is the reason then for this? Because it sounds so, you have to get more experience. Why not? Why? Because a few things will happen to them. First of all, money, financially, they're going to be drained. One is that there is not a lot of work for dive masters because instructors, that's another like long story by itself, but instructors can do the same kind of work. So owners, they love to hire instructors more than dive masters. If they do find work, and I'm not saying I'm for that, by the way. I like high-quality dive masters getting dive master work. But anyway, once they do find work, then usually the payment and the salary of a dive master is much lower than an instructor. Yeah, but shouldn't be about the money. It should be about fish and happiness and people, and the industry is all about money. Well, people that say that are people that have money. You know, it's and trust me, if you for the first year it's great to live in a small little bungalow and eating pad thai every day. You don't need money, but over time you want to travel as well. You want to see your family. You want a family yourself. Another story. So they now try to survive on this dive master salary, getting more experience, and they just realize that they're running out of their budget and they need to borrow more money. So paying for an IDC that they had in the beginning. It's just completely out of the question. They're now surviving to do an extra month or an extra month. And it's a very small chance that these people, they usually don't go home, think, all right, I'm going to just make some good money back home in Germany or America, whatever, and then come back. And then they got a job and their parents are like, forget about a stupid dive industry. There's no money to be made. You were treated like a slave. And that's the end. And this is just one of the reasons why they never come back. So that's one. And another one as well is that's a big one to me. It all depends on how you have been trained before. Again, there is a huge difference in quality. So if you had really bad open water course training, and a lot of times they don't know it because they don't know better, right? They haven't compared to other instructors. And they have bad advanced training and rescue or a combination or, you know, a bit of good and bad, good and bad. But the worst thing is maybe their dive master wasn't really good in training as well. Now they get sort of, like, for example, very short course. It was more about you pack the bags and you carry tanks than, you know, proper debriefs in the end. So anyway, so after they complete a dive master course like that, now they need to get more experience. But what that's going to happen, they meet more of those bad people around them. And when they go work for a dive center and they want to jump off the boat with a giant stride, they go, oh no, we do backflip somersalts here, which is, trust me, it's fun and I've done them myself. I need to be careful now because I'm going to piss off a lot of people otherwise. But the thing is that they start doing that kind of stuff. You know, taking them to swim throughs, and suddenly the swim through becomes a bit longer every dive and it turns into a Catherine, or taking them into wrecks without the proper training and blah, blah, blah. And let's say that 1% of these people that have done a year of experience of dive master work around the world, they come back to my IDC, or, you know, I meet them for the first time, doesn't matter. And they do stuff that I just go, in the beginning of that IDC, they just go, oh my God, dude, why? That was so dangerous, what you just did. You're about to teach DSDers. You're about to be the role model. Why would you do that? It's like, oh, we all do that. I worked in 5 different companies. This is what we do. Customers love it. I think it's fun. Yeah, of course it's fun to take them into a wreck. Yeah, of course. But these people, they're open water divers, and you took them into a wreck at 22 meters? What are you doing? It's like, oh, yeah, but everybody's doing it. So that experience could also be backfiring right now, because it depends how good that experience is. And I'm not saying the whole
time teach them bad knowledge, bad procedures.
And what's really important, like, you know, I have to add this, it really depends where you go. It almost sounds like right now the whole dive industry is bad. That's not true. So if these people, in a perfect scenario, they leave the dive shop as a dive master, they find another dive shop somewhere in the world, let's say in Komodo, one of the best diving in the world, but currents, strong currents. They get trained the right way with the best dive shop there, with good instructors, great attitudes, great management. They learn how to be the best leader ever. Now they move to the Caribbean. They work there for a few months. Best dive shop, best instructors. They work on a cruise ship. They work on a liveaboard. And all of them are the best cruise ship and the best liveaboards. And now they come back after a year to do their IDC. Yeah, wow. I mean, they could do it for free. No, I didn't say that. I will pay them because they're going to be superstars. I mean, yeah. We don't know about their teaching attitude yet, but at least, come on, they're going to have great diving skills. They're going to have great attitude. So yes, now I'm agreeing with you. Getting good experience before an IDC is very important, but the chance to get really good experience and not just lead people around every day with no one telling you if you're doing a good job or not, I'm not sure. And then there is, I know I say a lot about this, there's like 10 more reasons, but maybe a quick third reason is that when people do zero to hero, it's almost like a kid that goes to school. You're really in it. You're just doing all these courses. Your only thing on your mind right now is those courses. You're paying all your money towards those courses. You wake up and you learn. You process that information. You go to sleep. That's when you learn really good. And boom, the next day, you're doing something new in diving. You might have a weekend off, but your body is constantly learning and you're in it. So with extremely good zero to hero programs from some of the best dive centers in the world, they just constantly bombard it with extremely good information. And that's really good for them. And it makes the IDC go so smooth. Their IE, they fly to the theory. But if they take a break in between that zero to hero and they start leading fun divers around, they might come back as the best leaders in the world. But they forgot all their dive theory. They forgot so many things, like how certain parts of teaching. And I find out that they usually struggle the most in my IDCs. But they're the best leaders, but they're not very good instructors. And the people that do zero to hero, especially when they stay within our company, Cyber Cottage Diving, or the really good companies I used to work for before, they're the easiest ones to teach. They're superstars.
Yeah.
I know people are kind of hate me for what I just said, but it's whatever.
One thing that does make sense is that when someone leaves their pro training and goes to get a job elsewhere, as you rightly said, most employers would prefer to hire an instructor.
Yep.
And a really good example of that was my job in Papua New Guinea. They had 5 dive masters there, or dive guides, that were local guys, but they needed someone who could instruct. Now, I spent a year there. I think I taught maybe 5 courses in total, 6-7 people. And the rest of the time I was organizing the boats and leading guides and exploration, et cetera, et cetera. But the sheer relevance of having an instructor ticket meant that the visa to work in the country was a lot easier for the company to get. They couldn't get a visa as a dive master, but as an instructor, you could. And I think that's relevant to a lot of countries around the world.
More and more as well now. Like you're seeing this more and more happening, especially in countries where they are, you know, like the local people in that country can work as a dive master, but a foreigner to get that visa has to be an instructor in some of these countries as well. Again, it's I've seen this being used as a bit of a sales pitch as well sometimes of saying that, but it's not like the most important thing to do, of course, your IDC, but deep down in the end, like you're in this to get a job. right? And if you need to make a list of what do I need to get a job and what can potentially hold me back. And this, what you just said, is not always on that list, or it's being used in a, like I said, a bit in a sales way. But you're absolutely right. When you're trying to get that job, especially in a specific area, to get that you need a certain visa, and that being an instructor would help you better as well.
Yeah, yeah.
But again,
I think you've got to be open to be overqualified for the job. And this is one of the big issues in the dive industry. Whenever you see a job opening, a vacancy get advertised, then quite a lot of them are wanting an instructor with X amount of certifications done. They've got to speak 5 languages. They've got to have 7 different specialities. They've got to have worked in this location, that location, have their own dive equipment, be able to repair a broken compressor. And the list just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. However, if your base is that you are dive master and instructor qualified, then it's a good base to start with.
No, absolutely. And also, a really good professional in anything that you do in life is, like you said, you have to be humble. I can't say the other word because I'm Dutch, like humility.
Humility.
Humility. Okay.
So, close enough.
Close enough. Learned something today. Never too good to learn, right? Being humble, and don't get me wrong, I mean, sometimes the things that I say sound a bit arrogant as well here and there, but being humble is very important. And I think recognizing your flaws as a professional or something you're not ready at yet is extremely important. And again, these big ego people are like, oh, you know, did you hear about this new instructor that's coming along? Yeah, I know he's, you know, promoting a lot of advanced courses and whatever, but I heard he can't deal with any currents, you know, and because he never dived in a current before. And I'm like, yeah, all right. It's definitely a little bit of a lesser super good professional because, you know, he worries about currents in the beginning of his career. But when you then meet that person, you go like, whoa, who is he? Like, this is like one of the nicest people I've met. Students love him, super good in teaching, can handle himself in every condition that he's teaching in, but he's not so good with currents. So he just admits to himself, like, okay, I'm not going to be teaching in locations with currents. I'm going to choose not to go there. I'm going to not teach in Komodo. Mm-hmm. And then when I have some time in my free time, I'm going to work on my skill in currents with doing the proper courses, getting more confidence. And then in a few years from now, when I'm ready, I might go to Komodo and start teaching, you know, over there. And so he is admitting it. But there's so many people that then say, oh, because that guy shouldn't be an instructor because he can't handle himself in currents. They're so, you know, they can't look far ahead. And they're usually not good professionals too. While admitting that you're bad at something doesn't mean you're a bad professional or a bad instructor. You just have to not go there because it's dangerous, right? If that guy starts teaching in currents right now, it's not only bad for himself or dangerous, but he might, you know, get his students in danger too. But do we have to kick him out of the dive industry? Of course not. And I think this relates a little to what you just said as well. Like, if you are a dive master and you're not ready maybe yet to your IDC, or you don't know yet, you don't feel ready, and people are saying do it, other people say don't do it, and you just, oh, it's so hard, right? Well, you can still do your IDC and become an instructor and then choose not to work yet as a teacher or minimize it. Like, for example, like you said, you went to a location where they pretty much only have leading fun divers and a few courses. Great. That's perfect because you can now do your dive master work, still get that experience that you wanted, you know, as a dive master, but at least you got your IDC in your pocket. And then there's this one open water student and one DSD or two. Great. Now you get a bit of that experience. You're not hardcore teaching 8 people. And then in a year or two, now you got like, wow, actually, you know what? It's easy to teach. Give me 4 students. Give me 6. It's not here. I might now need to find a location where I can step up my game in teaching a bit. So it doesn't mean you don't have to do your IDC. You can still do it and then decide later how much you want to try to get out of it. Or do I say something really weird? I know it sounds a bit
makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit like sales.
Yeah, it sounds like sales.
That's the industry we're in, you know. A lot of it is about sales. And it's about getting the best you can for, you know, the money that you put into it. It's not a small amount of money that you have to stump up to get these qualifications. But what you are aiming for is to get out of that city CBD life, like this one behind me, and end up on a beach where you are. And it is doable. But all of these little elements you've got to put together, and you've got to source that information from, you know, reliable sources. And, you know, one of the many reasons that I asked you to come on the show, not only because, you know, we've been drunk a few times in the past to talk about this stuff, but it's the forums, like the Facebook groups that you are moderator, administrator, organizer of, where people ask these questions. And to be able to get that good information from people from within the industry. And if you've got half a brain, it's not too difficult to work out those people that are just a little bit embittered, and those comments get ignored, and you focus on the ones that are good.
Yeah, there is a limit to most of it. Like, the reason, one of the main reasons why I started setting up these groups. So it first started me being a moderator and fellow admin, to the point that I was like, okay, I'm still limited in some of the things that I can do, so let's create my own. And you know, it's hard because people think, oh, I just set up a group but I will have at least 100 people joining that group every day. That's not true. It's almost like a website. Yeah. you need to put time and effort into it, and there is SEO, there are things. But anyway, why? The reason why is not because you can bring people together in this industry and share things, but it's also a little bit to filter the comments, because it really depends. Like for example, there's a guy or girl that says, hey guys, I am thinking about doing my Dive Master course in location X, and within minutes, it is, don't go to X, it's horrible, it's a factory, it's only for money, yeah, worse, blah, 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 blah. That person will be influenced. Like, it takes an extremely strong person, or strongest, maybe not a good word, but it's like, person that kind of got like, okay, there's too much hatred right now, something fishy is going on, I'm going to go the opposite of that. That's what I learned. Like, when people are too negative about something, then I started going, hey, maybe that's actually really good. Anyway, that's another story. But most people, I'm sorry, they don't have that. Like, they do believe, okay, sorry, there's 99% of people saying this is bad, don't go there. And I think you and me know that, you know, one of those locations that people talk sometimes not so good about is Koh Tao. And then when you come here, you go like, wow, this is one of the best places in the world. Is it perfect? No, of course not. But there's no place in the world that's perfect. But I've been around as well a little bit. And every time I come back here or I go somewhere, I'm like, whoa, I miss Koh Tao. Some of the best divers are produced in Koh Tao around the world. Some of the people that were part of the cave rescue, they come from Koh Tao. So anyway, that's a huge discussion, you know, on the side. But what I'm trying to say is this. On these groups, you get this hatred very quickly. And I notice that if the hatred is too much and too intense, it will make people not go. But that person might now decide to go somewhere else. And guess what? There they might go to the crappy dive shop. They got a 15-day dive master course. They got rushed through their IDC, and they have no chance in their career, or a very small one. Well, if they would have not listened to those haters. So that the groups are great, but if there's too much of it, it can truly change people's paths. On the other hand, if a place is really bad, and we all know it is, and I can't say it, then those people that say don't go there because of reason, blah, 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 actually does help those people to maybe not get in trouble. What I like with those groups is that there's healthy discussions. Like, you know, don't go to location X, it's horrible, and it's a factory, and they don't care about you. And then the next one is going, well, guys, I am really sorry, but there were 100 people telling me this same thing. I still went, and I have a 3,000 euro job as a diving instructor and the best time of my life. So
yeah,
that one comment can make all those comments go away.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
I mean, it's, it again, like you say, it's one of those things that people can put comments on very quickly. And then I want to pick up on the Kotow comment. Yes, it is or was one of the busiest locations in the world, with thousands of people per year flocking there to do their open water on their backpacking trips predominantly. And I think when I was speaking to Elaine a few months ago, I think she said there's almost 90 dive shops on the island before COVID hit.
Yeah.
So it's extremely busy. And granted, there are some shit dive shops. You're going to get them because people want to cut corners and make as much money as possible and don't give a shit. However, the majority of the long-term dive shops there, I think, are an absolutely fantastic location for learning, because learning takes place. You've got a lot of people coming to learn. You've got instructors that are doing the same job day in, day out, so they know the job back to front and in their sleep. You've got dive master trainees that are coming 10, 15, 20, 30 at a time at a single dive shop trying to learn to be a dive pro. They're learning not only from a multitude of instructors, but a multitude of very experienced dive masters, and they're learning from each other because they're living the life and learning as they go. So for me, Koh Tao was indeed one of the very best places in the world to learn. Now, people will argue that one-on-one is the best way to learn. I don't necessarily think so. Some people might learn the best way that way. However, if I was to go through my dive master training and IDC and go on to do my instructor, you know, follow with a qualified instructor, and we're teaching one person on every course every time, you're only going to get that one person's faults that you can deal with.
Absolutely.
You're only going to have that one person that you can focus all of your efforts on. Whereas if you've got a group of two, three, four, five, six people, you're learning so much more because you're having to balance the wants and needs of a number of people rather than just one. So for me, having Koh Tao with no current or barely any current, great visibility, warm water, and a number of people to teach and learn from is the best environment to learn in. I'd much prefer that over one-on-one in the murky depths of a quarry in the UK. So that's my two penneth worth on Koh Tao, and I'll put that out there right now. If anyone wants to say that it's wrong, say it's wrong. I don't care. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking with it. So there's the soapbox away.
So when do you want me to give that $20 to say this? Do you want me to transfer it now or after the... No, just joking.
You can buy a bottle of whiskey for behind the bar next time I turn up.
Good.
Just talking about Koh Tao, because I want to stick with it for a little bit, because I know it's close to my heart, it's close to your heart, it's your home, as is it is with many other people. Now, we've had that prior COVID moment where it's super busy, there's regular income, all that kind of stuff. How have you managed to stay so long on the island with all of the travel restrictions, the minimal people, the minimal tourists? How have you managed to keep yourself busy and maintain an income that allows you to stay there?
Yeah, it's a good question. Of course, a bit sensitive as well for many of us, not only here in Koh Tao, but I think around the world. I remember hearing about this COVID virus was almost like somebody walking up to you saying, "Hey, an airplane just went into the Twin Towers." Remember that day? I think everybody remembers that day in their lives, right? And it was like, what? Yeah. You know, that's like a movie. There is this virus. It's going to shut down the world. What? How? And even if it does, right, what? Are we going to do this for a month, 3 months? Oh, actually, to be honest, though, I was doing these 16-hour IDC days. I wouldn't mind having a month off on my PlayStation and doing some fun dives. And I know that we actually had, some of us had these jokes in the beginning, like, time to the old days where there was no tourists and go to the beach and have a beer with a campfire and fantastic. But yeah, I mean, wow. It went 3 months, 5 months, 1 year, and now, what did you say, 18 months so far, even more?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and I think like a lot of people, they lost not just their jobs, but they had to leave, right, the island. And there's all kinds of reasons for it. They couldn't find online work, or they didn't want to do online work, or they expected, like myself in the beginning, what they expected a bit longer, like, oh, this is just going to be 6 months. Six months. So I saved some money. I'm good. I'm going to enjoy. And then once after 6 months, there was still nothing going on. I think then they couldn't catch up anymore in trying to find something online. I'm not saying that's the only reason. It's just one of the many reasons. Some people just kind of were like, you know, I had a great time in the dive industry. I just want to go home. And who knows, maybe this was sort of their excuse to get back to normal life again. For me personally, it was a bit weird, because the first thing that was very important to me was I wanted to look at what happens after COVID. So for example, let's say that COVID would last for 2 years. I went already extreme from the beginning. It felt like a month or two in the first month, but very quickly after like a month, I went like, okay, this might take like 2 years or much longer, right? So what will happen afterwards? Will we just get a few students coming back per day instead of the boat full of students like you just talked about? Will I have maybe one IDC candidate a month or every few months? Because then it's not worth sitting it out anyway, because I might never be able to recover. If it's going to take me another 5 to 10 years before I might get, you know, a few students enough to get a decent salary, it might not be worthwhile, right? But what I actually thought, and this is a long story that I'm not going to go into right now, but what I figured out, I think it's the opposite. I think once it opens up again, and I mean open up, not with special sandboxes or going to special hotels, which is all, I'm not going against that. I think it's all good for safety to be very careful opening up in one go. But let's say we can, and you just need two vaccinations or something. People have been locked up so much in their homes as well, in their countries, that they're screaming to go on holiday. And I know they're going on holiday maybe within their area, like, you know, Americans go to the Caribbean or Europeans go to Europe. But we all want to explore. It's hardwired into us. I can get very geeky talking about that. Let's not go there. But I think it's one of our instincts to explore. And we want to go to, if you're from Germany, you want to go Asia. Trust me. We just can't yet. Or it's really hard and it costs a lot of money. But I get, the moment it opens up, I think we're not just going to welcome people. We're going to welcome too many people. And most of the dive instructors and dive professionals, some course directors, they went home. A lot of them thinking, oh, I just come back after COVID. But you know how it goes, right? You get a job, and it, from like working in the bar, you start getting a proper job, really, really good salary with a suit and a suitcase. And before, and you get maybe a girlfriend, you marriage, pregnancies, babies, families. And before you know it, this whole being a diving instructor idea just go poof.
Yeah.
So what's the sad story, but the positivity behind it is, remember what I said in the beginning about people saying there's too much competition, there's too much other instructors. There's no competition anymore. And I know from talking to owners privately, they are all freaking out. They're like, oh my God, when this is opening up, we don't have enough staff, or most of them. Where are we going to get these great instructors from? And Betty is saying the same thing. I've heard him say it a few times. I wrote a blog about it as well. So the job opportunities, I think, for those instructors are going to be huge. So if you're doing your IDC, for example, now, or you know, when COVID is sort of finished, when people can travel better, you will have huge opportunities as well. So for me as a course director, I think sitting it out and sticking here, waiting for that moment, I think I'm going to have a lot of bookings, a lot of new fresh attitudes of people that really want to do this as well, that not just were convinced as a dive master to do their IDC, but really want to come out. And that's the reason why I decided to say, okay, I'm going to sit this out. But if this is going to take for like 2 years, and also like another thing, like you said, Koh Tao is one of the best places. I've put 15 years of my life, even longer, into building a career here. I've been trained by one of the best dive centers in the world. And then at the same time, now I'm working for another dive center, which is in my book as well, by going around one of the absolute best dive centers in the world with the best staff, the best management. It's just, and we have everything. Like my classroom is right next to the beach. I can see.
Yeah, it's pretty sexy, isn't it?
I can see the pool. I've been around where we had to be in taxis for 2 hours to get to the nearest pool. And I literally walk out of the classroom and do a giant stride into the pool and teach him a skill circuit.
And then you go across the pool and you're at the bar.
Exactly. You can swim even through the bar in the end of your day. Yeah. And if I'm going to leave, will I get that back? Maybe. But it's a big gamble, right? And can I be a course director anywhere else? Yes, I can. But will I get Kotao facilities back? Maybe not. So anyway, so this all really and then coming to your question again, I'm sorry guys, I talk too much. It's one of my biggest
problems. That's all right.
So coming back to your question is that how do I survive then for that year or two until it gets back to normal? And what a lot of people don't realize as well is that we have to pay bills here. And it's not just the owner of the dive center that has to pay for their, you know, the captains and the boats and repairs and whatever. Course directors, a lot of times they have a bit of a business share somewhere. But it's even instructors and dive masters, like you said, you need to pay for your visa every year. It's very expensive sometimes. You have to pay for your work permit. So yes, it is cheaper to live here than back home, but you get these extra costs that you normally don't have. You need diving insurances, you need to still pay for your membership fees, blah, blah, blah. So anyway, what can we do? And then I thought, okay, you know, like I'm just going to try to get as many income streams as possible. I might not like all the income streams, but the future is bright. And sometimes we have to do things that we might not like so much to get something in return that is fantastic. So anyway, so personally, I got my YouTube channel. I had it already before COVID. It's a real passion of mine as well, my YouTube channel. So if anybody wants to check it out, I got actually two. I got Marcel van den Berg, so just my name, which I'm focusing more on the professional training. And then I got scuba diving tips, where I focus more on recreational tips and training for diving. Mm. And anyway, so that already brought in some money, but it's very low. If anybody thinks,
you got a few followers on there now, haven't you?
Yeah, and that really changed mostly because of COVID. So because I had extra time to work on those, I used to just have skill videos. So now I had extra time, and I finally thought, okay, I could do some really cool videos like this, like talking to people and teaching them how to clear your mask, or you know, really talking to people. And now I've seen an increase in my subscribers. And suddenly I hit 10,000 subscribers, and I was like, wow. And I know it doesn't sound like 100,000 like all these other big guys on YouTube, but hey, you know, that for me, 10,000, like, I don't know if I can show you, but yeah, this was, you see that?
It's a happy little chubby. Yeah. But I mean, to put it into perspective, I mean, we're in a very niche sport. So 10,000 followers is sizable. You know, when you consider, you know, comparing it to the big boys, the boxers, the athletes, all that kind of stuff, it's a huge array of people following that kind of sport. So 10,000, well done, mate.
Thank you.
Be proud of it.
And it's a step and an inspiration to go further. But what I realized was that the income is not big enough yet to live on, to pay your bills from. You can with YouTube, don't get me wrong, because there's ways to make really big money, but you have to also do that in a specific niche. This is like an hour, a week of a lecture. But in my niche, what I'm doing and the time that I have to do it, I don't make enough to pay the bills yet.
Yeah.
So on the side then, I found online work. In the beginning, it was hard and difficult, you know, from being a teacher in a classroom, from jumping in the pool, from going on a boat, from being on the water, showing people fish, having that beer or glass of white wine. I like white wine. In the end of the day, to sitting behind a computer and, yeah, suddenly moderating comments for newspapers. That was a big change. Yeah. However, you always get better at things when you do it a lot. And 2 years down the road, I actually start kind of like my online job. It's steady money. It comes in exactly on the 15th and on the 1st every month, which is really cool.
Yeah.
And it gives me a lot of free time to work on the YouTube and other things in my life suddenly. So it's not the end of the world, but I cannot wait to get back to teaching. Mm. But
I think you made a very good point though. I mean, once the comfort of travel or the flexibility of travel is allowed again, and they organize all this shit so we can get out and about, I think you're going to get a mass influx.
Yes.
I've said that a few times now on various episodes now, but yeah, travel's very much going to be on the agenda of a lot of people at some point in the not too distant future, hopefully.
People have said to me, well, why is it good for you? Because you're a course director. You know, that's good for the dive shops, good for the instructors, because those are the backpackers again that want to do open waters and DSDs and advanced. Mm. But somebody needs to teach them. And like I just said, there is a huge shortage right now. So I think everybody's going to win.
Well, I tell you one thing that I want to do, and I am going to do, is I'll put it out as an open invite, and you can put it on your YouTube channel as well if you want, as a snippet. But I want to invite dive pros onto the show, because, I mean, we've got, 27, 28 episodes now. I think you're 28 or 29.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got all these amazing people, Sylvia Earle and various other conservationists. But what I'd like to do is every now and then just have a dive pro on that can talk about particular locations around the world that they know very well, mm-hmm. or a particular type of diving that they do, something that, you know, they're experienced in.
Mm.
And leave it as a, you know, it's an interest for people who want to go to those particular locations and find that type of diving. So they're going to hear firsthand from people who know the location. But also it's going to be an advantage for that dive pro as well, whether they're a dive master or instructor or course director, because it's a bit of a seller, you know. It's all about selling yourself in the industry, as you know. And people are going to want to dive with the people that they like. Mm. So if dive pros are on this show, they can advertise themselves, the location where they're at. And if they move on, then they've got a point of reference for future employers. And I'm guessing that's the kind of thing that you could do with the YouTube channel eventually, if you end up going down that route.
Yeah, absolutely fantastic idea. I really like it. We talked about the current was just an example of someone, but I actually have one of my IDC candidates, one of the coolest ones that I had as well, because he did everything with me. He did open water, advanced, rescue dip with someone else. But he did partly his dive master with me, and then he moved on to IDC, MSTT, and he started working in Komodo. Mm. And he's one of the best, not just divers, but just, you know, people, students, teachers. This guy is fantastic. And he loves that. He loves being in those currents. So having someone like that explaining his experience in why he loves teaching in those areas is fantastic. Because some people that listen to that, they would love to do that. And now they really get an insight, information about how it really is. Well, if they're going to ask
me, that's the thing. Getting that reality, and I'll pick up on that because we use drift and currents as an example. Komodo, Galapagos.
Mm.
As you know, I still have. Whether it's going to reopen or not, I don't know. But my travel agency for scuba diving kind of got killed by COVID at the moment. However, I had a number of people request to book vacations and trips in Komodo and Galapagos, that kind of thing. And I'd always ask the skill set, how many dives have they logged, what kind of dives they've logged. And the disturbing part is that some locations will accept people with as little as 50 dives. And I'll refer to Galapagos now. Mm. Some places will refer, you know, will say that you need a minimum 50 dives and that's it. But those 50 dives could have been done in pool-like conditions like hotel and never seen a current in the world. Now, when I visited Galapagos a couple of years ago with the missus, there was a few people on our boat that were in much that kind of situation. They've got 90, 100 dives, but never done current. So they sat on the boat for 2 days because they were too scared to get in the water. So having someone who works in Galapagos come on the show and say, hey, you know what? If you've got 50 dives and you've done 30 of those in Komodo, that's not a bad starter for diving in Galapagos. But to get it from the horse's mouth, getting that experience, and it's just like the word of mouth kind of reference, it gives people a realistic view on what to expect and what the requirements are to dive in a particular location and save a shit ton of money. I felt so bad for those people that sat on the boat. $6,500 to sit on the boat for two out of the seven that they're meant to be diving. Terrible. So I want people on the show that can give that experience.
It's not just the money of the recreational divers, the fun divers that book that live aboard or holiday, like you just said. Instructors. Like in the end of my IDC, I do a job placement training day. And it's like throughout the entire Dive Master and IDC course, we teach them and help them about how to become successful, how to find a job. But there is this little bit of information that's always missing. And I put it in the end of the IDC and it's much more raw, much more hardcore. I always have gloves and I say, the gloves are off now, guys. I've been teaching you the proper stuff, but today we're going to talk about reality. And you can be the best instructor in the world or dive master, but you can just walk into this dive shop and the first thing the owner says is, you know, beep, go and grab some tanks, blah, 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 and beep, get your act ready, and bop. And suddenly, whoa, what was happening? Is this the real world? Well, not always, but sometimes. And what is the biggest reason I think that people fail as a diving instructor, that they never get that career that they wanted to, is running out of money. And where do they run out of money? A lot of different ways, but the biggest one is traveling to the location where they think they have a job or looking for a job, and then it doesn't work out over there. And what people just never think about is how much it costs to get there. So, for example, what you just said is perfect. We get this, let's say, instructor who is super excited, is a really good instructor as well, done all the courses, paid all that money, goes online, says, I'm looking for a job as an instructor. Galapagos, looking for instructor that could speak whatever German. It's like, oh, I'm German, you know, fantastic. Gets an email, gets the job, and gets on an airplane. Well, you and I know pretty much wherever you live in the world how difficult it is to get there and how expensive it is to get there because it's so remote, right? I mean, you have to cross all those Chinese boats, fisher boats, and oh no, sorry, you're not allowed to say anyway. So you have to bribe them to get there. No, you don't. Okay. So anyway, so let's say it will cost you $3,000 to get there. It's not. It could be cheaper or more depending where you are, but let's say it's $3,000. But that's the only $3,000 you have as an instructor for your career. So what's going to happen? You're going to pay all that. You get to the Galapagos. You're super excited to work. You know, you've done your hair. You're ready to go. And suddenly you realize that those currents there are way too strong. And much stronger than what you've ever experienced. Again, are you a bad instructor? No, you're one of the best ever. But you're not ready yet for those currents. So now these people there go like, okay, but you said on your email that you've done like 1,000 dives. Yeah, but again, those 1,000 dives were in swimming pool-like conditions almost. Again, not bad instructors, but not ready for that area. So now they have to fly back another $3,000. So they lost $6,000. And then suddenly to now fly to another job opportunity somewhere in the Caribbean or Egypt or whatever, it's just too much. And again, they get their normal jobs and they lose it. Or even the parents or anybody around them are saying, come on, this is nuts. We paid thousands of dollars for your education and now it costs thousands of dollars to fly around the world. So for those people to hear on your show or on YouTube from an actual person working in the Galapagos saying, all right, I got here and I wish I knew these five things, right? That you sometimes see in video games or whatever.
Yeah.
Guys, if you want to work in Galapagos, which is the most beautiful place in the world, I guess, to work, one of them, make sure you get at least 100 dives. From those 100 dives, at least 50 need to be current dives. And not just drift dives. They need to be drift dives, you know, blah, blah, blah. And if you get all of that sorted out, you have a good chance here. And, and that information will be gold. And it's not out there. Nobody says these things. Well, some.
Exactly. You've got all the, like you say, Facebook and all that kind of stuff where people give comment, but who are you trusting? Are you trusting the guy that you kind of like the grammar that he puts in, or because he's non-aggressive, or do you like the aggressive guy, or, you know, the lady because she's female, so she's going to be more honest? It's not necessarily true. Yep. So to have someone who can discuss openly like this and have an opinion and a confident opinion on a location is, in my opinion, worth its weight in gold.
Never thought about this. You just hit this. This can change people's lives, which you just said and came up with, Matt. And this is, we're going to talk more about this after the show. This is fantastic because, again, there are a few course directors and good instructors that do this in these extra days. Like I just said, like I like to do a job placement day, but it only affects those few people from our course. And again, if we're supposed to teach everyone in the dive industry in a way. This is worth gold.
Well, this is why I want to do it, because I want to put a reality check on it. I think I'm going to get my soapbox again here, but in this day and age where everybody's got access to information and the freedom to give their opinion, I think the majority of the time that we see discussions online, because in text you can't put any kind of tone to it, the majority of it comes across aggressive.
Yep.
And people are always wanting to prove someone wrong.
Yep.
I want to prove people right. Let's change it around. Let's have someone on the show that can say, I know this because I've been doing it for 5 years. Get all that negativity away. Let's have some positivity for a change. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I'll put the soapbox away again now.
I like it. I like those terms. Most of the people that I found online on social media that give opinions are people that have time to give opinions. So what I mean is this. I want to work as a dive instructor, guys. What salary can I expect? Oh, wow. That is just that is like, okay, guys, stop everything what I'm doing right now because I need to moderate. You know, it's just...
Yeah, I get the popcorn.
Yeah, exactly. I love those little gifts that come up as well. Not all of them, right? There is truth in some of this hatred, but a lot of them, the big ones, they have no work. And why? It's because they're just... They have that bad attitude. They're bad people. They're bad instructors. Yeah. They're bad quality things. And that's why they're online. And they have that time to go, all right, you know, I got screwed over so many times in this industry. I have to protect other people because they don't know that they're bad. Huh? Because I found out that people with bad attitudes, they actually don't know they have them. Otherwise, they would change them, right? Because
that's the thing. It doesn't necessarily make them a bad person. It just means that the influences that they've had whilst starting their dream career in the industry haven't met the expectations that they had at the start. So they become disgruntled. And and being ex-military, we used to see that in the military all the time. You know, you stay in one job too long and it's not what you expected. You start to get very disgruntled and disheartened with life in general. So I think a lot of those haters are generally off-gassing all that pent-up anger and aggression for not meeting their own expectations.
It's almost like therapy, but I think there's a goodness in that heart too. That's what I'm trying to say. They're not all super bad. Like it just came out, you know, but like it's they want to help. They want to protect these people that have a little bit of money back home and they're thinking about investing that into becoming a diving instructor. And they like, well, you're just going to lose that money, then you're not going to get a job, or if you get a job, you don't get any pay, and then you're going to come home after 4 years of your life having a great life, having good lifestyle, but you know, you missed out on 4 years of trying to work on your career. Let me help you to tell you, don't do it, or do it but expect this to happen and then go for the lifestyle. But what about me then? What, you know, I came in this industry with absolutely nothing, so nothing that they recommended me to have, I think, I can't remember anymore, to have something like $4,000 in my pocket or euros. And those were the people that were selling me the course. So, you know, sometimes they're right. There are these bad salespeople also in this industry who don't care and just want your money. You know, there is a truth align everything.
Yeah.
So I got here, and of course that money went very quick because I heard you need a computer, you need a dive computer, you need a wetsuit, you need your own regulator to get a job. And I was like, oh my God, it's just happening. And all these people saying you will never make it and this and that. And now I am a Petty Platinum course director, that a platinum status since the first year of my IDC until today. And I made really good money. Yeah, there were not also as a course director. Like I did as an open water instructor. I just doing open waters and advanced, and then nitrox. I did a huge thing with nitrox. My average salary was 100,000 baht to 150. So we're talking about around 3,000 euros. But I had better months, but I can't even say them online because every time I say, oh, guys, I made 172,000 once, people just say you're a liar. You're telling lies to people and talking them out of it. And I'm like, I made 172,000 baht in a month once. But it wasn't money that worked my ass off. And I did get 8 open water students, the max that you can teach. And then not only I got that from that dive center, because it's just a very popular dive center, but I could team teach with other instructors. And now I actually got paid for 2 extra students. And then my con head used to be really high. It's a video that I'm about to make, by the way. So subscribe to that YouTube channel, Marcel van den Berg, because I'm going to give you all the tips that worked for me to become successful very soon. But anyway, my continuing education ratio sales were 80% plus. 80%. Mm. And on some of them, they were 100%. And it was 100% on everybody. Now, my good friend that I used to team teach with, Matt Harrison from the United States, is here in Kotao now. And we had a conversation like this the other day, and he interrupts it. And he says, no, dude, we did 110% for 3 courses long. How do you get 110%? Because you might go, he's lying now. There is no 110. Yes, there is. You do 8 open water students. All 8 of them want to do the advanced with you. But one of them has a boy or girlfriend that's already open water and now wants to join that same advanced course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, boom. From that, you get 80% of them that want to do nitrox during the advanced course as well on top of that. And a couple of them want to rent some cameras. You take them out of dinner and 2 of them in the end of the course are, I'm not selling. They're asking me, hey, we want to go on a liveaboard in the Andaman Ocean or sea on the other side. Do you have any recommendations? Now, I got some of my best friends owning liveaboard companies and I don't want it, but they sent me a commission. Of course, I take it. That's how you get 172,000 baht. I'm not saying everybody's going to get it. And how do you get 100% advanced course? Yeah, that's watch my video because you need, it's not just in the end of dive number 4. Hey guys, so who wants to do the next course? You know, you have to, there's hundreds of things you have to do in those 4 days to get that.
Well, this circles back around to the attitude of the instructor.
Yeah.
And, my con ed was very high as well, as was sales of items. And as long as you're passionate about doing what you're doing and you're delivering to your customers with that passion, they're gonna want to continue with you because you're making a fantastic experience and there's an opportunity there to improve that experience for them as well. But it's also being about honest. And honestly, if you've got someone who's clearly not comfortable in the water and not going to achieve and enjoy doing the advanced course, then you don't try and sell it to them. But those that are comfortable, those that are happy, it's all down to the attitude of the instructor.
Absolutely. And
so plain and simple.
I can't count how many times I went up to one of my students saying, all right, you did your open water, you mastered all the skills, you're extremely happy. Like the difference between confined and dive 4, from crying in the pool to, putting the wings out on white rock on dive 4 and a fantastic, right? But are they truly ready for that advanced course? And saying then, all right, maybe let's get a bit more experience in your case. Not as an insult, but like you said, being honest, not just to make money. You have to do it. You have to do it. No, just being honest to that student actually made them say, you know what? They'll usually go away then and after an hour or something, they find you again in the restaurant and they say, look, I've talked this over with my partner. We were supposed to travel on to another area you know, but we're traveling for 3 months. We're so happy for what you've done. We're so happy for your honesty as well. And we so want to continue in diving that we're going to sign up for 10 fun dives. We're going to stay here for a week. Would you be able to teach us the advanced course in a week from now? What? Really? Wow. Yeah. So if you promise them the world or the moon or the solar system or the universe, if they're going to sign up for that advanced course, then give it to them. Or even more. So if you promise them the moon in the advanced course, then give them the solar system. Yeah. Or if you can, okay, I'm getting a bit geeky right now. But anyway.
Honestly. That's true. It's true. And I think of everything we've just said over the last 10, 15 minutes, I think the overriding factor is that when someone enters or considers entering into the dive industry, they have to consider the minimal income that they're going to achieve, considering the locations they want to go to and work on that minimal income, create a budget, find out the living costs of that location from people that come on things like this show and YouTube, get an honest opinion on what it's going to cost for you to survive and have budget there if you need to save a bit of money for returning home in emergencies. Absolutely. Anything else that comes on top of that is a bonus.
Absolutely.
But if you go there expecting to earn $1,000 when you're only going to earn $400, you ain't going to last 5 minutes.
Yep. The biggest killer in people's career in this industry is not what everybody talks about. It is running out of money. Because people are saying, but money's not important, it's supposed to be passion. Yeah, but you know, you need to pay for your pad thai in the end of the day. And if you run out of money, you run out of food, and you just become miserable. And you know, people don't run out of money as well instantly, Matt. You know this, right? It goes slowly because they have hope. Yeah, but next month they're gonna give me more students. They told me next course or next fun divers or whatever. But what happens is that a lot of them, they go to the bars, right? And then in those bars, suddenly they do still have some money. And they buy all these beers, and they buy people rounds, and the more they get drunk, and the more that everybody's sharing their stories about not making enough money, the more shots you order and spending more money. Yeah. That's why in the gold rush, you know, the people that really made money, right, were the bars and the poker games. And I sometimes feel that here as well. I mean, the bars here, they sometimes, but anyway, but the more miserable then they become, and the more now they go onto Facebook and start hating and saying it's, you know, it's the industry that's bad. But in the end, if you planned it the right way, like you said, and you talk to honest people and you listen to honest people that says, okay, realistically, you need amount X. It's going to take you an average of a year to get a proper job, to get some income. Now, efforts is important because some people, sorry, they walk out of an IDC into the perfect jobs. Like seeing a whale shark on dive number 2 of your open water diver course, right? It happens, but it's rare. And then some people, they, even with good attitudes, not always the bad ones, but sometimes it still takes a few years, especially when you focus on working in this one location that you really want to be, this one dive center. Yeah, you might have to, you know, get 3 years of hard work to get it. But anyway, if you say, okay, let's say an average of a year, now you can say, okay, how much is my rent? How much is my food? Make a budget, an emergency to go home. And then what's very important is to understand that you can get in accidents. You can fall off your bike.
Yeah.
Infections in these tropical areas, if you decide to go there, they heal much longer than other things. You know, it can take 3 months of your 1 year plan just because you cut your food and it gets infected. It costs money. So you plan, you know, all of that. These are things that I love to talk about with people if I get them on the phone, like WhatsApp, and they ask me, what should I plan for money before my IDC?
But that's the thing. I mean, people like you and I that have got that experience, you can share that experience and be honest. And that's why one of the most important things when we come to safety of diving, it's not just under the water, it's above the surface as well. If you're honest and open about the mistakes you've made, other people learn from them, and that increases the safety of the sport as a whole.
Yep. 100%.
Full stop.
And you're turning them into these new role models as well. I can do hours about this. Like the risk management lecture that we have in our IDC, I remember when I was learning to become a course director, I assisted a lot of IDCs, and some of them were really good, like really good lectures. But sometimes we had like sort of like guest course directors coming in, or brand new ones, or in training, or staff instructors, or whatever. And they were doing this risk management lecture. And from listening to one course director before, it's one of the best risk management lecture I've ever listened to. That takes around 1.5 to 2 hours, I think. To now this other course director walking in there, just 20 minutes, bam, risk management lecture, done. Let's move on to the skill circuit in the pool. And it's beer o'clock time. I realize a huge difference between that. And that's why when I teach my IDCs, my risk management lectures is absolutely a baby of mine. It's one of the longest one as well. 3 hours, and that's on a good day. Like, and of course, I have a lot of breaks in between. And you might not go, I will never go with this guy to do his IDC because I don't want to listen for 3 hours in the classroom, but talk to my students. And I think, I'm not saying all lectures are good, but that lecture I think is pretty okay. And why is it such a great lecture is because I'm not just saying, all right, don't do this or don't do that. I'm giving real life stories, and most of them happen to me, about how to avoid these things. And one of them is you know, going to bars and all that kind of stuff, and just sharing that honest experience where things were close calls or whatever to your new IDC candidates. They sit like this, like literally like this for like 3 hours long. and one of the best things that we've ever heard was we got a manager from the Caribbean that contacted us and wanted to give the biggest shout out, especially actually to Maddie Barker. If I can use your name, Maddie, sorry.
Hello, Maddie.
She trains our dive masters. So I do a little bit here and there, but she does the majority. And she's absolutely amazing, like fantastic. I could spend an hour talking about how good she is as a person and as an instructor. But so what happened is one of our dive master candidates that completed the dive master course, mostly with Maddie, went to the Caribbean, got a job as a dive master, so you see it can happen. And what happened was that he refused doing these weird jumps they do off the boat. And they do these weird jumps because it's good to sell the videos, because they make videos of that with the students and fun divers. And he was like, giant stride, whatever happens, I am doing this one entry. Now, I don't want to go into discussion saying that's the only way. I mean, I'm not saying that all the other entries are bad. But for him, he was so trained a specific way in Siree Cottage by us that it didn't matter what they said to him. He could even lose his job. He refused to do another entry. Now, you might go like, well, what is that then? Are you teaching these guys like military style? You have to do giant strides and anything else is bad. No, I just said that. We've been doing the opposite. We are telling them scenarios of when every entry was super cool, super good for fun ways and sales and whatever. And then we have a few stories, not many, but a few, where some of these entries went wrong. And very close calls to serious injuries on some of our watches. And once our students and DMTs and IDC candidates hear that, they just go, whoa, I've been doing these entries for so long. Some of the best instructors in the world have taught me to do this, and they never had an injury. But we tell them a real story. And then we say, now you can choose. So after we certified you, do what you want to do. We're not going to hold it against you if you do a weird entry. So they go on the boat. They want to do a weird entry because everybody else is doing it around them. But that story pops back in. When that one student did this weird entry, broke her mask, caught her face, and they're going, well, you know what? My babies behind me did not just pay 10,000 baht to do a weird entry. They want to see fish. And to see fish, they need a whole face for that. So let's not have a 1 million chance of them cutting their face because they're doing a more dangerous entry. Let's just do a giant stride and find the moray eel that they want to watch so much. I'm not saying that's a fish, but... Do you see where I'm
going? I could have thought of a better, you know, subject, but
it's,
I get your meaning.
It's just cool to get that sort of like compliment in the end of the day. But it happens with stories. If I'm going to say in my IDC or Dive Master program, guys, don't drink. What are they going to do?
Yeah,
they're going to drink more, right?
Yeah,
it's like your mom and dad saying, don't smoke. Aren't you going to, you know? But if we tell him, like, look, I had some fun as well. Let me show you some pictures of when I was in this bar as an instructor. It's fun, eh? All right, now I want to show you the picture how I looked the next day when I crashed my bike. Oh.
Yeah.
And you know what? I had 8 students waiting for me. You know how much I get paid for 8 students? I get paid $500 in 3.5 days of work. And I had to give them away to another instructor because I look like this after my bike crash.
Yeah. And that's now the thing. I mean, it's simple stuff like a bike crash. And we're talking bike crashes. I mean, there's sand on roads and all sorts, wherever you go. And it can be a minor bike crash, just a little something, take a little bit of skin off your legs. But you just can't operate so soon after having a little spill. And then add in being in the tropics, and you mentioned it earlier, what a lot of people don't realize is that seawater isn't actually that pure. It's quite bacterial. And once an infection gets in there, you're living in the tropics, it's a long time before it repairs and you're back to health. Yeah.
This balance we have to find as instructors.
And again, it just comes down to that word we mentioned over an hour ago, attitude.
Number one thing on your mind is their happiness, their safety, and their experience. If that's your ultimate goal, then all the other things will just lead up to that and fall into place. So, okay, shall I have another shot with them in the bar? Yes, it's fun. Will I make them happy? Absolutely. Will they love me if I buy them another shot? Yes. All right, wait. I'm ticking all the boxes. I'm making them happy. This is good. I need to do this. But wait. Tomorrow, are they still happy? No. Yeah. They're going to feel like crap. Are they going to do more diving? No. Are they going to check out of the resort? Yes. Are they going to like me because I bought them another shot? No, because you were the reason for them to have to cancel the course and not enjoying fish for longer.
Yeah.
And exactly. You maybe turn into a beep after a few more shots, which makes them write very bad on TripAdvisor. Yeah. Bad for business.
Yeah. Know your limits. Yeah.
Know your limits.
Mate, I think we'll wrap it up. I'm getting a little bit hungry now, and it's way past my lunchtime now. And I'm sure you've got a few things to do. Probably no climbing mountains. Get some food yourself. Very quickly, before we depart, what are the groups called on Facebook that people can have a look at?
Yeah, so thanks for asking. But there are a few of them, so I know this sounds a bit weird. But let me try to give the most important ones that help the people the most. So there is a recreational Facebook group that is for everyone, for all levels of diving, even if you're a non-diver and you're thinking about diving. And that is called Scuba Diving Worldwide. So look for Scuba Diving Worldwide. There is no, you have to wait until I approve a comment. So everything gets approved straight away. But I heavily moderate it afterwards to make sure that there is no negativity. Everybody has a fair shot of saying something. No slacking off other locations. It's extremely friendly Facebook group. That's the idea. So if somebody says, hey guys, I just saw a little goby on my first snorkeling experience, instead of somebody saying, well, who are you? This is a technical dive, whatever. No. It's like we want the most enthusiastic people saying, wow, that is so cool. Have you ever thought about scuba diving? Let's move on. So very, very friendly, very positive. Go and check that one out. Now,
and that one's what's it called again?
It's called Scuba Diving Worldwide.
Scuba Diving World.
Yeah, I think you see the picture is dispersed.
Whee!
There goes my 10,000 subscribers. No. Oh no, it's not. It's still here. It's the thank you from Project Aware kind of thing. Sorry guys, but
it gives you something to do this afternoon, clean up the glass. That one. What's the next one?
Next one. So the next one is for dive masters or dive masters in training. It's called Dive Master Jobs Scuba Diving. And that one is specifically to help DMTs and dive masters to find work in the industry as a dive master. Really focus on that. But then, of course, if they're thinking about continuing to IDCs or there's some instructors on there that are also asking for work, or dive centers that are offering work for instructors too, it is allowed. But it's it's really for dive masters specifically, because again, some people, they just don't want to teach people. They just want to be a dive master, and we need to give them an opportunity for them to find work. So it's there.
Yeah, yeah.
Another one that we have, and that's, I'm not the owner, but I'm an admin together with a great team of other admins. It's the biggest one, and that's called Dive Jobs Worldwide. And that is to find work in the industry on all levels. And also, of course, companies that offer work, but even like jobs on there of management of dive shops or buying even a dive shop or a boat. So definitely check that one out. It has one of the biggest chances for you to get some job in the industry.
Yeah, there's a lot of people in that one as well, I think, isn't there?
Yeah. And then if it's okay with you, I want to add one last one. It's not a group. It's a page. It's called Scuba Diving Tips. So like the logo here that I just got and my coffee mug that I'm very happy with. It's my
picture frame you just smashed.
It's my diving blog that has a page related to it. So it would be awesome if you like and follow that. And what is it? It's different than most of the other diving blogs. Most diving blogs, they focus on diving stories and what else do they focus on? Dive equipment, gear, travel, all these things. And they're fantastic blogs to read. Mm-hmm. But what I thought was missing in the blog industry was something specifically to teaching tips, specifically. So for 99% on scubadivingtips.net or on this Facebook page, I will share teaching tips. So for example, how to organize confined dive number one. How to be the best in giving mask remove and replacement tips. And it's not a moneymaker because most people, they don't search really for this. So ad revenue is, I think I made $1.21 last month. from 80 cents. So, you know.
Yeah.
But it's really not because of that. It's truly to help other people to become better instructors, better dive masters, and for people that, you know, they maybe signed up for this open water course with an instructor that rushed them through the course and they feel that they still have a lot of questions, and hopefully that page and blog will help them with answering some of those questions.
So, well, the thing is, I mean, echoing back to when we were talking about, you know, working in big groups and gaining experience from people's mishaps and what have you, and organizing them, the same goes with learning from other experienced dive masters and instructors. So your page here that shows how to do, I don't know, maybe mass removal, mass replace. It is your, excuse me, it is your technique, your adaptation on how the skills should be done and achieved. It doesn't necessarily mean it's the only way to do it, but it gives that person who's looking for the information a little bit of information they might not have been aware of. So they can cherry pick from a multitude of areas to design their own comfortable way to present that that particular skill.
100%. And it's so important that you just mentioned that. I'm very happy too, because I do have descriptions, and people don't always read descriptions, as you know. They just want to watch the video. In every description, or almost every single one of them, it says, this is not the only way. It's very important, because sometimes you have even other instructors who are saying, oh, look at this guy online, you know, being so arrogant, showing this is his way. No, it's just a way. And a way that worked really good for me. I struggled with the mask skill when I was a beginner diver, and there's different instructors giving me different tips. I picked the best of all of them. I use that when I teach. I try to learn over time, constantly learning. I even learn from DMTs and DMCs and even students that give me tips. Say, hey, you know what? This really worked for me. And I try to put that in a video. But then I also put in there, hey, if you have tips after watching this video, if you had learned something from an instructor that I don't know about, or if you're an instructor that has this really cool tip or trick that makes it so easy for people to learn a mask skill that I didn't mention, please leave them in the comments. Please. Because I really learned from that myself. And I will ask you politely, wow, can I steal that? Can I use that in my courses and make new future instructors better? So that's another thing as well. It's those platforms that give me the opportunity to learn from other people around the world. And that's just awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. And you never stop learning.
Never.
If you say that you've learned everything and you've got nowhere further to go, you are that ass.
I could have put it in a better way. Yes.
Yeah. Okay, Marcel, we're going to wrap it up. People can find you on YouTube as well, and that's Scuba Diving Tips as well.
Yeah, so two channels on YouTube, the same as the other one. So one more time, very important. It would mean the world to me if you subscribe and ring that notification bell, because then you can get a little notification when the videos are uploaded. I like some of these videos as well. Of course, if you don't like them, that's fine. But then just walk away and do something else in life. No, but if you like them, it would mean the world if you give that thumbs up and subscribe and ring that bell. So two channels. Again, Scuba Diving Tips is more focused on recreational diving tips, how to clear your mask, rescue diving course tips, how to learn how to use a compass to navigate during your advanced course. That will be on Scuba Diving Tips. And my other channel is my name, Marcel van den Berg. And that is more focused on professional level dive master training, like skill circuits, risk management lectures, how to increase your sales, like we just talked about, in a very friendly and honest way. All of that will be on that channel. And yeah, of course, in the end, hopefully you can just subscribe on both. That would be...
That's the bonus.
But thank you.
Mate, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very, very much for coming on the show. And I'm sure we'll do something again in the future as well. Thank you. And I look forward to having a look at more wonderful videos on the YouTube channels.
Cool. Thank you so much for having me. I really enjoyed it. And yes, I would love to have another talk in the future. So thank you, Matt.
Happy days. Thanks, Marcel. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye, everyone.
This is Scuba Go Under the Sea, the podcast for the inquisitive diver.